My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for him in World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the tremble in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating. The video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he's still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. Thanks so much for being here. I know you have a choice in where you can listen each and every day, and I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio, hour number 2. And if you were able to, I hope you joined David Shostokas and I. We got in the last half hour. Zoom updated all of their everything. I had 2 or 3 programs this morning that updated on me. I mean, literally right as I was getting ready to go on air. But Zoom was one of them, and they've changed their entire format. So I'm going to have to dig into that this afternoon and try to figure out what in the world are they doing at Zoom. Because all of my recurring guest Zoom links have disappeared. They're gone. Zoom wouldn't even let me in this morning until I gave them my secret squirrel handshake, as my friend Matt Long likes to say. All right. I am very pleased to welcome my guest to the program. His story is really amazing, and his heart to have left and to create a legacy that we all can benefit from. He is a very sought after speaker, conference speaker. He is a gentleman who has written a number of successful books and has had a long term history of very successful sales. And he has chosen to share that wisdom with the rest of the world through his books, through his seminars, and through helping corporations to identify the values that matter. I want to welcome Richard Battle to the program. Richard, welcome. Good to have you with me today. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Pastor Greg, for having us with you. It's our pleasure.
So the unopened present, you have had, and I was looking at this, you've had a lot of challenges in life. How would you tell people? Because I remember a lady one time I had gone to listen to and was in the holy hip hop arena at the time. And one of the speakers came forward and was giving a testimony, and she talked about that, you know, if you want to elevate to certain heights, be prepared for what you're going to have to go through, much as a diamond, you know, is a piece of coal that has to be severely crushed. Can you speak to that for a minute and what that process is? It is there a shortcut, or do you have to go through the fire?
Well, I think that's a great question, and let me say first, I've been blessed to have many successes beyond my wildest expectations. But yes, I've had a few challenges, and many people have had much worse than I've ever experienced, and so I never think of myself as woe is me, because I always run into people that have gone through things much, much worse. But I think we look at, if we ask for patience of God, we're told to watch out, because the way we learn patience is not through a seminar, but through experience. And all we have to do is look back at Paul, the ultimate, and what he experienced. And when he was told in Acts about, I'll show him what he must suffer for my namesake. And to me, I'm just grateful that when I look at my successes, I see God's hand behind every success. When I look at my failures, I see me preempting him and trying to do something on my own. And so I'm blessed today to be working on projects that I hope and pray and believe are in his will to help other people with uplifting messages.
And to that end, you started, or you have written a book. Now, talk about how you, in fact, I had our last child I had at 45 myself. 18 years difference between the oldest and the youngest. But talk to me about what inspired you at 45 to say, you know, I want to make sure that I leave something behind that my child's going to be able to follow.
Well, and what's interesting, and this is the first half of the unopened present, and the second half happened 25 years almost after the first half. And those two events that far apart coming together for this message, to me, is awe-inspiring as well. But when my son was about 6 months old, I was 45, and I was thinking one day, what happens if I don't live long enough to teach him life's important lessons?
Sure.
And so I wrote him a letter, and I listed 43 principles, lessons, if you will, truisms, biblical principles that I thought were important that if I didn't survive, I wanted to make sure he learned them. And unfortunately, he passed away 3 months after I wrote that letter, so he never got to open the present that that letter was. He never got to learn those principles.
Thus the name, the unopened present.
Well, that's the first half of it. And okay. there's a double entendre, if you will, from the standpoint. And it was interesting going through the naming. It's very much an inspired name of the book because I was looking at the unopened gift or different things. Sure. He didn't get to open the present, but every day for us is a present. And you've heard those analogies before. Tomorrow is an unopened present that if we live tomorrow, we will open tomorrow. And so every day we have an opportunity to open the present day and live it to the best of our ability and honor God the best way we can.
And so 25 years after you had written this list, you are now releasing this book.
Well, yes. And what happened was very humbling, and how the book came about from that. And it has a radio connection. There's a show that I do periodically in Iowa, and always it's a 4 minute hit.
Okay.
And you and I know 4 minutes in radio. I mean, we could both talk for 4 minutes without even taking a breath almost. And
yeah.
So this particular time was last year, 2022, and it was a Father's Day week. And we were doing discussions that week about Father's Day, grieving fathers, and then about the life lessons from this letter. And in Iowa, I had this show set up at 7:39 in the morning. And I had to drop my truck off for service at 7 o'clock that morning. So I decided I would do the interview from the service lounge of the car dealership. And about 7:30, it got crowded. And I looked over, and the sales lounge was empty. So I walked over there. Phone rings. I'm doing this four-minute interview. And I hear and notice somebody walk by, but I didn't pay any attention to it. And after I get through, I get my truck. I'm driving home, the hour-long drive. And I'm listening to Ronald Reagan narrate his book, An American Life. And he's just at the point talking about all of these challenges and setbacks he experienced and how they contributed to his success. Phone rings. I don't recognize the number, so I don't answer it. Next red light, there's a voicemail from the dealership. I go, oh, my gosh, something's wrong with my truck. That's the natural reaction.
Sure.
So I call. The guy answers the phone. He said, were you the guy talking on the phone in the sales lounge a little while ago? And I said, yes. And he said, I just wanted to call and say thank you. I was praying to God last night. I prayed over and over and over. Please, God, send somebody to give me a message that can help lift me up because I lost my daughter 2 months ago. And I believe he sent you today to give me that comfort. He didn't know I was on the radio.
Right. I'm so glad that you went into that lane, because as you were speaking here, I was hearing the Holy Spirit saying to ask you, how do you share? Because, you know, we look around us, and I'll have Rob Schilling on a little later in the program. We're going to talk about some of the evil that we're facing today. And if you've seen Shadows, Sounds of Freedom yet, but
Sound of Freedom, yes.
Yeah, it's very powerful film. But in light of all that, we have people that are saying, well, you know, where is this good God? And you know, I'm sure, right, you know, with the things that you've been presented with, that you've had people ask you the same question. Well, okay, that's great, Richard, but how can you believe in a good God in light of these traumas, these challenges, these, you know, deep and apparent, you know, devastating losses?
Well, and let me connect the last part of that dot. I was very humbled. I talked with him for several minutes, and then we hung up. Later, I'd call the radio station in Iowa to let them know what happened. the host because he didn't know the impact he had in Texas with someone who didn't even know who was on the radio show. And because we never know, I never know when I'm speaking with someone like you, if we're making an impact or not.
Right.
And so this was very humbling to me. And when I got to thinking about it, and I wrote about this in this portion of the Unopened Present, I got to thinking of all the things that God had to orchestrate to bring this about within 1 4-minute period. And it demonstrated to me there's no coincidences, and God is involved with the small things in our life. He's not just there for the big things, and that's our tendency to think, well, this isn't important, so I won't bother him with this. I'll wait till I got something important to bother him with. And I learned after losing my son, and to tie into your last question, our typical response when we suffer is to ask, why me? And so what I learned for myself is why me looks in the past and God is not in the past, and why me is very self-focused and it's very limiting. And if we get trapped in that past, we can't grow to help ourselves or help anyone else.
Sure.
And so I learned that when I suffer, the question I want to ask is what now? Mm-hmm. What am I supposed to learn so I can grow in the future and I can help others?
Oh, good.
And God is in the future waiting for us to catch up with him because he's leading us into the future.
What and is so he teaching me now? What is he showing me now in the midst of this storm that's going to propel me where I need to go?
Yes, and my objective is to learn one suffer, one lesson. I don't want to have to suffer twice for one lesson.
Here. You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. Years ago, God gave me a sermon about the Jesus in the boat and when the storm comes. And it's interesting when you study into that and realize that the Son of Man, the Son of God, God in the flesh was resting in that boat as that storm was raging. And, you know, they shake him awake and they're in a panic and what have you. And you got to stop and realize Jesus stood on the shore on the other side and said, we're going to the other side.
Yes.
He didn't say we might get there. He said, well, we're going to aim for the other side of the lake. But, you know, we might get there. We might drown in the middle. I don't know. He said, no, we're going to the other side. And he left a crowd, which is a whole other part of the story that's really rather interesting. The crowd gathers and Jesus is like, yeah, that's fine. But I got to go to the other side. And that at the other side, that man that was demonically possessed goes to Decapolis, which is 10 cities. One of those cities is Damascus. The revival that Paul went to put down was started by that guy in Damascus.
Yeah.
So Paul's journey to Christ began with Jesus's crossing to the other side. But the point that I make that God showed me is this storm was literally carrying them across the lake to the other side.
Yes.
They decided to stop the storm. Because, well, we're afraid. We better stop the storm. Well, so what happens? Now they've got a paddle. They get to the other side. They're exhausted. They're dragging up the hill, and they barely get there when Jesus casts Legion out.
Yeah, no, it's really a great point. And so after all of this, I was talking to one of my friends and told him about this experience. He was aware of the letter, and he says, you've got to take this letter and this story and put this together and share it. And so that's what I did was I took the 43 lessons, if you will, expanded each of those with examples, with quotes, with a scriptural example of stories that I could use so somebody could pick up and read those with more depth and context. And so I've been told it's not a sad story about the loss of my son. It's an uplifting story about how God uses these different situations to create these messages that can help lift people.
It speaks to legacy as well, and lessons that we have the opportunity to lead. I think of a couple of things you mentioned about it, you know, this happening around Father's Day. And you know, I've talked about that just recently. You know, we just had Father's Day this past month, and talking about the impact of fathers and how those that are in prison, the vast percentage, 90-something percent, didn't have a father figure in their lives. How significant, Richard, in your research and in putting this book together, have you found that A, the need for a dad, and then B, the need for a legacy that's done with an intent?
Well, I think that's a great question. I think there's definitely purpose for mothers and fathers. We both have unique responsibilities and capabilities, and our society demonstrates, as you say, what happens if mothers and fathers together don't raise children. Mm-hmm. And you talk about legacy, and looking back, that's what makes it amazing, because here I thought of this. I would not have thought of this idea if I'd been 25 years old, most likely, because you look at most young families and young parents, they're not thinking legacy for themselves or their children. They're busy putting food on the table and making a living and trying to live for the day and raise kids. So they're not thinking as long-term as I had the privilege to do at that time. And so this gives them an opportunity to do so where they're at now and create something on their own if they want to as well for their own legacy.
Right. To be able to sow some seed into the ground of their own children. And what does that, you know, potentially look like? As you travel the country right now, I know you do a lot of interacting with businesses and so on. As you travel the country right now, I've heard a lot of business people talk about the quality of the employees and what they're trying to get to come to the table to work for them. How significant are messages like the unopened present, perhaps, for a business that's trying to bring up, raise up, and find quality people?
Well, I think that's a great question. And we're having people buy this volume for graduation gift, for new parents. And in the business world, the principles are there for business leading a little league team or Girl Scouts or raising a family. The lessons are there. And you're right, when hiring people, so many of them have not had these lessons or some of the lessons taught when children are growing up. And there's opportunities if business wants to develop people to be more successful in life for them to share those. And I think it's a great blueprint. Homeschooling has been using the volume as segments for homeschooling each week for children. So there's many opportunities because of the timelessness of the message.
Oh, and I would think that, too, you know, business people need to understand that there's a buy-in that has to happen. And I realize that we live in a very disconnected culture these days, because of, you know, technology, because yes, kids have, we have an entire generation right now that is completely disconnected in so many ways from human interaction. And yet it is a necessity if you're going to have success in business.
Yes. And our culture today, the media and politicians want everybody focused on the present right in front of their nose. Forget the past. Don't worry about the future. And think about all this popularity. And I see these young girls shaking their bottoms on videos for 10 seconds trying to gain followers, and how shallow that is. My dad used to say that they're a mile wide and an inch deep type thing. And we have to restore the Judeo-Christian values and the Western civilization work ethic that succeeded And one of the examples I used in the unopened present was Rudolph Valentino. And I'll bet 98% of your audience probably never heard the name, but back in the 1920s, he was the biggest movie star in Hollywood. Yep. And had people throwing themselves at him. Everybody thought his fame would last forever. And he died at 1926 at 31 years old. And now he's totally forgotten because he didn't leave anything of substance.
Right.
And so those type examples we have to teach people as well. What are the values that you can instill in people today that will last multi-generational?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Show folks that book. There we go. The Unopened Present, Richard Battle, The Unopened Present, as either as a gift or perhaps even as a family devotional. But it's an opportunity for you to instill some real values into your kids. And, you know, whether you're a business person or whether you're not, these are values. They're evergreen, if you will, that you can take and use to help build a successful foundation. Richard, thanks for sharing that with us today.
My pleasure. God bless America.
Amen. Amen. All right, we're going to take our break. We'll be back. Claire Lopez, Rick Manning are with me. A lot of foreign issues going on. And now with the NATO situation, with Ukraine, with what's happening now, are we on the verge of World War III? We'll talk with Claire and get her insight with regards to that coming up. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. You're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Back with more coming up right after this brief break.
So up next, we have ClanSlate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. And ClanSlate is a formula that's made from a natural ortho-silic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your clean slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your clean slate today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size, regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen, or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear, even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code CHOSENGENRADIO at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com, coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for in World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Did you know you can do your tithing and love offering right from your computer? Visit www.chosengenerationradio.com to support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation. Now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. It has been an interesting morning. I'll voice for those that may have already experienced this, but boy, Zoom decided to do an update. And that update meant that everything was changed. And so when I went in this morning to grab all of my Zoom stuff, hello. So when I went in to grab all of my Zoom stuff this morning, all my recurring stuff is gone. So I'm going to have to try to find that this afternoon. I called them. Was on the phone with their automated recording for like almost 10 minutes, just going in circles.
What a nightmare.
They wanted my secret squirrel handshake. My friend Matt calls it a secret, you know, when they want your, but they wanted my little, you know, my meeting code and this little code and that, and go to this place and look here and go there. And I had to sign in, and then the program restarted my computer. Yeah.
That's a great way. That's a great way to start a show. I mean, I'm sure that the fact that you weren't on the air for half an hour while you were doing all that was a good time had by all.
Oh yeah, it was great fun. Let me tell you, it was just absolutely thoroughly enjoyable to get on air 30 minutes late because of because of absolute idiocy of Zoom. So way to go, Zoom. Just a quick advertisement for you. You're a bunch of dopes. And a bunch of dumb programmers that thought that they needed to change something that wasn't broken.
Well, they needed to run it through China. They needed to get the spike properly in place. So don't worry. For whoever's listening now who has the capabilities to listen and monitor, we just want to say hello to all those people in Beijing who are listening, but not showing up on any rating systems.
And may God recompense you for the evil that you've done.
A justice would be good. I'm in favor of a just God. Let's
get on to some subject matter. So one of the things that's going on, I know this is going to be a pet peeve for Rick, but that's okay, Rick. You'll just don't get in an accident as you're driving along there.
No, I'm parked. I'm parked safely.
Okay. Very good. All right. So, there's conversation in the last, 3 or 4 days, 5 days, about NATO now suggesting that when the time is right and when certain
criteria are met,
yes, that Ukraine will in fact be considered to be accepted into NATO.
Have you started the recording yet?
We're on. We're going.
Oh, okay. Just making sure.
Yep, we're going.
Okay.
Your thoughts on that, Claire?
So when the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars, Ukraine may find itself in NATO and all will be in alignment. Is that the the answer?
I don't know.
That's the, from the Age of Aquarius back in the...
Yes, yes. All right, come on, Rick.
The situation right now is pretty much the same situation as before the February 22 invasion by Russia. That is, Ukraine does not now, did not then, and will not for the foreseeable future be able to meet those criteria, one of the most important of which is that a candidate member must be in control of the entirety of its internationally recognized sovereign borders. Ukraine is not. Now, think of the situation. Were Ukraine to be admitted right now, and the war continues on, and Ukraine is still fighting to liberate its occupied territory, and maybe it's taking a few kilometers a day, so does the NATO then obligation shift to the east by 2 or 3 kilometers every day? That's not tenable. That's not feasible. So for that reason and other reasons, it's going to be a while. But I do support what came out of the talks in Vilnius. That's Lithuania, where the NATO summit has just been held. And that is to offer a sort of interim kind of security pledges, which are not tantamount to NATO membership yet at all, but do make a commitment to support and help to defend Ukraine against invasion.
Let me ask you a question, Claire, along the lines of what you just laid out in terms of criteria. What you've laid out tells Putin and any future Russian leader that if you actually engage in a territory for peace deal with the Ukraine, say, okay, well, we're going to have peace, but and we're going to move our we're going to create uncontested territories, even a some kind of zone where there's a neutrality zone of some sort. You are effectively putting the pieces into place where Ukraine will be accepted, has a pathway to be accepted into NATO and fast-tracking.
Well, no, and not unless the borders are the internationally recognized borders, 100%, which they would not be.
Well, but the international community can recognize whatever borders they want to recognize.
But they're not going to. Ukraine has borders, and they're fixed. Right.
Well,
and that's
okay.
Not going to change.
And life, you're very generous in that, because in life borders change all the time. Countries' borders shift all the time. So the question is, does this disincentivize the Russians from doing a peace deal and disincentivize the Ukrainians for doing a peace deal, which resets borders essentially?
Ukraine has no obligation.
We want to get out of this. Somebody has to agree to stop killing each other.
Well, Ukraine has no obligation to engage in negotiations to transfer away part of its sovereign territory. No, their sovereign territory either.
Okay, well, then you're making a really great case for the UN's position related to the West Bank and why Israel has absolutely no right to settle the West Bank, because
well,
the international
yes, they do.
Community,
oh, no, we hold go on, back hold on. To no, the League no, of Nations.
They
you go
won.
Back to the San Remo Declaration. You go back to the Balfour Declaration.
What is the international definition of Israel's borders? It doesn't include the West Bank, right?
Well, that's Judea and Samaria, actually, and it's been Jewish land for 5,000 years.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just telling you that under the international borders that set the same Ukrainian
borders. Rick, hang on a minute. But I think we're talking apples and oranges here. And I'll tell you why.
Not because
you why? No, no, no. Can I? Can
yes,
I?
Absolutely.
You're the host.
I didn't say bring up Ukraine. I wanted to talk about France.
Okay. Well, hang on a minute. we may get to France. Ukraine has a historically established border. Israel has a historically established border. No, they Rick, they do. I see you looking funny like they don't, but they actually do have a historically established border. Russia has pressed into the Ukraine for probably 150 years. And initially, you know, Ukraine and Russia were separated. Russia advanced its empire. The czars came into power. There was a uncomfortable arrangement that existed between Ukraine, but it wasn't a question of whether or not there was a border question. It was a matter of the Ukraine, the country of Ukraine, submitting itself to the empire of Russia pretty much by force. But in the same way that you have, you know, Latvia and so forth, I mean, those.
Yep, I got it. I got it. And just to finalize this point, 180 years ago, Texas was part of Mexico, which is part of Spain. And we won a war. We won a war. America won the Mexican War. And we had something happen. They ceded territory. So you end up having Mexico cede territory. They end up having they ceded what is California. They ceded what's New Mexico. They ceded what's Arizona through purchases, but it's largely as a basis of a war that was won and Mexico not being able to defend their territory. So are we going to contend under those circumstances that because something was the borders 180 years ago, that there's a right that the Mexican government has a rightful claim on California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas?
No, okay, so, Ukraine's borders were fixed after the Soviet Union broke up in 1991.
Thank you, Claire. Current
borders,
well, thank you, Claire.
And established under international law by the United Nations.
That's fine.
Russia of Ukrainian sovereign territory began in 2014 and really expanded, of course, in 2022. That is invasion of sovereign territory that they have every right to defend, and we are morally right, as well as nationally security, compelled to defend.
That isn't the case I'm making. The case I'm making is the borders and borders shift all the time, and the question is, does the agreement that came with NATO membership attached, does that create an environment where the Ukrainian government, if they're forced to have no NATO protection unless they win the territory is back, do they have absolutely zero intention incentive to stop fighting? And similarly,
why should they stop fighting? They're defending their people and their land.
And let me ask you a question. Why, Rick, do you think that Putin is going to stop at Ukraine? You're playing the role of the fool. You're playing the role of the court jester by being a part of that. Honest to God, those that believe that Putin is going to stop at Ukraine are absolutely gobbling up the disinformation of the Russian mill. Because
well,
he's not.
Multiple speeches by Putin over a course of years declaring that he has no intention of stopping with Ukraine, directly threatening the Baltic states and anything else that he considers Slavic part of what he calls the Rodina, the nation.
He's already expressed this on multiple occasions.
He's not going to stop.
And to do a Chamberlain appeasement of Putin in any way.
You realize what's happening. Okay, you have just made the argument for U.S. troop involvement. I just got slandered and I need to answer this, okay? The case has been made. Ukraine should continue to fight, okay? Ukraine itself is saying we're running out of men to fight. That's what they say. So if they're running out of men to fight, and we're saying, well, their sovereign borders have to be protected against Russia, which I don't have any problem with. My initial question was, if the borders got reset, then Ukraine gets put into NATO, and so that's that's something that can be done internationally with a snap of a finger. So, all you need to do in looking at this is say, if Ukraine's running out of people to fight, out of trained soldiers who can fight, And they sit there and say, there's no way that we can protect Kiev because of a constant onslaught of new money, new arms, and the like. And the Chinese are helping do the Russian thing behind the scenes. We know that. So you have this situation. If the head of Ukraine, if Zelensky has looks at a battle plan and sees there's no way forward, he's taken a big offensive. He's not picking up territory. They're getting slaughtered. And let's say they're picking up a little bit of territory, but they're not achieving their ends, their military ends. At what point is Zelensky locked into continuing to fight for borders that he cannot defend versus stepping back and saying, we cede these borders to Russia. We want to survive as a nation. That's the question.
But they won't.
And if he says that, well, and we say, gee, Westphalia, then we have a responsibility to say, well, Ukrainians are not the only ones who should have blood in this game, at which point you have to roll NATO troops in there to protect the border. That's the only solution.
Even Article 5 of the NATO treaty does not obligate the commitment of troops. It obligates the commitment of assistance. It does not obligate the commitment of troops.
But you've made a moral case that that Ukrainian borders have to be defended. If Ukraine can't defend those borders, then we can help them.
Well,
how are we helping them? Defend all of their sovereign territory.
How are we helping them?
What if China had taken off the west coast of the United States, okay? They invaded and they sliced off Washington, Oregon, California. Maybe we'd say, well, okay, so what?
We'd then elect the president who would take it back from them.
Would we then accept the intercession, the negotiation demands by, I don't know, Canada or Europe that we need to negotiate with China and just give away the West Coast because, you know, Montana and Utah, Nevada and Arizona, they're going to be just fine. So give up the West Coast. We would say, get out of our business. You have no right to tell us to negotiate away our territory.
Well, I would argue that China's the wrong example. I think that the allowed invasion of Spanish-speaking people into what they are trying to call their land, that's something that's happening right now. We're allowing it to occur. And the question we're going to have is whether or not we allow for that breakup to occur because of the demands of the people of the state of California.
Well, that's a whole other show.
That's a different show problem.
That we need to,
I get it. I was asking a question about NATO, about the NATO agreement, and if it creates a disincentive to end the fighting. You argue that the fighting shouldn't end until every Russian's out of Ukraine. That's fine. That's an answer. My other question that I had on this is very simple. Having this in Vilnius is obviously sending a massive signal to Putin. Mm-hmm. And what is the net? Is that an intended signal? And what is the effect on Russia by having the NATO meeting in Vilnius, telling Putin very clearly the Baltic states are off limits? And absolutely. Combining that with Sweden joining, now being allowed to join NATO with their Air Force, which is pretty sophisticated, as part of that deal. Yeah.
I mean, absolutely ideal location. I don't know that our president exactly shined at the event, but the overall NATO summit was absolutely on mark, on tone. It's not just Russia that's going to be taking a message from that unity. It's China. She is looking at what's going on, too, and probably expected early on that NATO would fracture, that they would not be able to hang together, and that Ukraine would fall. But they're seeing now in China that that's not the case at all. Quite the opposite is happening. She has got to be having second thoughts about Taiwan, or at least second thoughts about what he's going to do.
It certainly creates a unification of Europe that, while it has problems, the EU has its problems, creates a military unification. And to me, the big winner from a foreign policy perspective on this is Donald Trump's policy. He went there and said to the NATO nations, you need to be meeting your NATO commitments of 2% of GDP being put into NATO. And now those NATO nations are saying, they're saying now, affirmed, we're going to do 2% as the limit, as the bottom 2% GDP bottom limit of what we're going to spend on military, which means that those NATO nations are going to be able to do what Donald Trump wanted them to do, which is actually fund their own defense and not be totally reliant on the United States to do that job for them. So this is a validation of the Trump policy when he went and got in their face mm-hmm. and told them what the harsh reality was that they were going to have to do. And now those NATO nations are have agreed to that in Vilnius. So that, to me, the commitment to defense of Europe against Russia is the big takeaway from Vilnius.
Yeah, but also the message that it sends to China. I think not that NATO has anything to do with East Asia. It doesn't. But it does send a message about the free world, the Western world, and our allies in East Asia, sends a message about that to Xi and to the CCP.
Well, that builds to your question, Rick, you wanted to ask about what's happening in France right now as well. Because obviously France is a part of NATO, and we have to ask the question, you know, who's facilitating the uprising in France right now? And is there a foreign entity that's behind this? Because I think we can all agree that the uprising right now that's taking place is Islam.
Yeah.
That's the battle that's taking place. So do we have a foreign entity that is assisting these Islamists in the attempt to overthrow the French government?
Not that I know of in particular, no. I mean, obviously the entire Islamic world supports what we can term the hijra, the migration into Western Europe. Why is it called Western Europe in the first place? Because Islam already had in the past conquered all of Byzantium that today would be Eastern Europe, or much of it in any case. But what's happened is that France, as well as other countries of Western Europe, like Belgium, like Netherlands, like Sweden, even Germany, UK, have all allowed themselves to be overrun by huge percentages of their population with newcomers who do not share their values, their traditions, their history, or their principles, their Christianity as the the foundational faith of those parts of Europe. And they allowed them to come in. France is now about 10% Muslim. You can't survive if you allow that to happen, which is a lesson to what Rick was just saying about our own southern border and allowing in hordes of unvetted, unchecked, unassimilated in particular, illegals who have no intention of assimilating to our Judeo-Christian-based constitutional republic.
Well, you can see that by the you can see that by the Somalis that are in Minnesota and the things that are happening up in that area, Minnesota and in Michigan as well. To your point, too, look at the supposed conservative talking heads that are embracing Andrew Tate, forgetting the fact that Andrew Tate is Muslim. And what he's presenting in ideals is not Judeo-Christian. He's presenting the Islamic view of family.
I don't know anything about him.
Yeah, I don't know much about Andrew Tate either. I just know he's a lot of people don't like him, and some people do. And I'm not an expert on Andrew Tate. What I think I know is that you have what we're not being told in the media, and that's in France. They want to put it all in socioeconomic terms and say, oh, these people aren't, they're not making enough money, blah, blah, blah. And the reality is this is an Islamic uprising in France that the police union has sat there and said the federal government's not letting us fight it. So they've got the police union who's now attacking the Macron government for not pushing back for French law to be able to be enforced. And you have Macron sitting there somehow in Vilnius when he's not controlling his own borders. And I would make the argument the UK faces the same set of problems. We've seen the problems in Denmark. We see the problems in a lot of countries that are traditional Western, we think of as Western European countries, where they've allowed this immigration to occur and allow essentially a foreign population to invade a foreign population that has a moral set of moral standards that are different than the native population and have an intent of enforcing those moral standards over the passive objections of that native population. The native population has lost their moral standard. They don't hold on to Judeo-Christian ethos because they aren't Christian anymore. So they have a legacy without that they don't understand the morality behind it to defend it, and they're facing a determined, organized effort that has a moral code behind it, right or wrong, a moral code behind it that calls for the destruction of the ethos of the West.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I would also point to some physical realities on the ground. Let's take France, since we're talking about France, but this extends to the United States, too, and other countries. And that is what's called no-go zones. In France, they call them zones urbaines spéciales, ZUS. And as long ago as 2006, as I recall, France, the French government, published online, on the internet, a list of 750, what they call, no-go zones, ZUS, zones urbaines spéciales. And that means that instead of ensuring making it an obligation that these incoming hordes of Muslims, primarily from North Africa for France, meaning Algeria and Tunisia, Morocco and so forth, that they would be interspersed among the French population across the country to be assimilated into the French system. They allowed them to congregate in these no-go zones, these enclaves, where to this day, law enforcement, even firefighters, EMTs, and emergency rescue units, they can't enter without being attacked.
We have a similar situation. We have a similar situation in Michigan and Minnesota here.
It's ceded sovereignty.
Yep.
To these enclaves of Muslims. But the United States, who was it, Rick? You mentioned Minnesota, or was it Pastor Greg?
I did, yeah.
In the little Mogadishu enclave, as they call it, in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. That's a no-go zone.
Yep.
Police have told me that in the past.
Michigan has the same thing in Dearborn.
And they do, too, and other cities do, too.
And in New York, I just sent you a link, but in New York, in a section of Brooklyn, there are Muslim police enforcing Sharia law.
Yeah. Well, they patrol the streets. I don't know that they can actually enforce Islamic law, per se, but Islamic law is in the courts across the country. When I was still at Center for Security Policy, published, I think it's a couple of studies about the presence, the existence, and even acceptance of Sharia, of Islamic law, in U.S. courts.
Yep. All right. We're at the end of our time for this.
Oh, boy.
It's a very full half hour. And Rick, my sincerest apologies. I did not mean to slander you in any way.
I appreciate it. Hit a battle. It's all good.
It is.
And we need to finish with Ukraine in the future. That way we just end and we can just go into blank space and it all's okay.
At some point when it all really blows up, then we'll get back into the conversation, I suppose. All right. Hey, thank you both so much for an incredibly great conversation and touching on topics that, you know, I mean, we had a very lively but civil conversation, and these are the this is what the format. This is America. This is our country, and this is what we're about is discussing ideas and sharing our opinions. This is the epitome of free speech. So, thank you all for participating in the great American experiment. God bless you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you both.
Always happy to be experimented on.
There we go. All right. Take care, guys. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and I look forward to having you back in 2 weeks.
This is Adam Mundall with State Air. We need people on radio willing to speak about the Bible, the Constitution, and putting God back in our nation again. So join me in sponsoring Chosen Generation and Pastor Greg. Call him today at 830-446-3624. That's 830-446-3624. This has blessed my business and it will bless yours.